A lot of people want to run for office, but what does it take to actually win? Join us as we transform candidates into leaders. This is the Campaign School. Welcome to the Campaign School, Ruy Soto.
Hey.
All right. So this is one more attempt and take. And the reason Rudy's with us, he is actually running for Congress. And you're literally on the road. So everyone bear with us if the connection is a little spotty. Where are you right now, Rudy?
I am in a little town called St. Mary's in northern Idaho in the Panhandle. This morning I was actually on the Coeur d'Alene Tribes Reservation at their casino and resort, where I struggled a little bit to connect because of the weak internet signal. And so that's definitely one of the reasons I'm running, is to make sure our rural and reservation communities are not left behind here in the 21st century.
I'm glad you're doing that. I'm actually really personally passionate about those issues themselves. Homework gap aside, we can have a separate rural broadband connectivity conversation as a part two. But for those who may not be following your race, tell us a little bit about how you got started in politics and what made you want to run for office.
Thank you. Well, I'm really excited to be in this race because I come from a background that's where it's not common for people like me to run for high public office like this. I was born and raised in Nampa, Idaho. I'm a Shoshone Bannock tribal member and the son of a Mexican immigrant. I grew up in poverty in public housing among circumstances which lead a lot of kids into trouble. I myself was one of them, and I was bad at being bad. So I spent the better part of 2 years between the ages of 12 and 14 bouncing around juvenile corrections all over my home state here. And so I was really fortunate, though, that I didn't become a part of the school to prison pipeline system. I was able to move away and start new and fresh by going somewhere where there was a stronger public education system. My older brother in Oregon, who was old enough to be my dad, he's a carpenter, a union carpenter, married a nurse, and they took a risk and let me live with them and helped me go on and be the first of my family to go to college. And
wow, Rudy. Yeah. So really, your brother's presence in your life was really a game changer and set you on the path that led you to running for Congress. Am I hearing that right?
Yeah. You know, in the public education system and the support system and, you know, resources that make it possible for people to climb out of poverty. Absolutely.
So how did that get you? Well, you and I met actually in DC, and we've known each other for a long time. So what was that road from Idaho to Oregon to DC like? And being the first to graduate college, that's amazing.
Right. Absolutely. So it actually started with getting involved in my culture and then in the Native American community. And so as a student, I got invited to a meeting because of pizza. I went to it. Free pizza, you know, that's how they got me in the door, and it was an advisor.
That's how they got many of us.
Right. And so I was told, hey, we need you all to show up at this meeting because the student government is going to cut our budgets potentially.
Oh, no. Did we lose you, Rudy? Let's see if we can get. Are you still there? Yeah. There you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rural Idaho, everyone.
Yeah. Seriously.
So they gave you the free pizza.
They gave me the free pizza, and then they told us they needed our help to show up at a meeting so our student group's budget didn't get cut. And that's really what made me wonder, why would they do that? That makes no sense. We're like a small minority, mm-hmm. and this helps us all try to make it. And it's a strong community here on campus, and you know, there's so few of us. And so I got involved and saw that there were no people who looked like us that were, you know, part of the process. And so I ended up running and forming a coalition with other minority and disadvantaged student leaders And we got some of us on the student council. And that's
I did that too. I started a college, a campus coalition. Is that how all of us got started? I think we our first community organizing might have also been on campus.
Exactly. That's how it happens, you know?
Well, tell me more about your career in DC. And look, I've got some crazy interference on my side too. Tell me more about your career in DC and how that led you to go back home to Idaho and want to make a difference.
Yeah. So, you know, after being a student leader, getting elected student body president, I had gone on some trips to DC for education advocacy conferences on issues like the Dream Act and others. And it made me feel passionate about sticking with being civically engaged. You know, I enlisted in the Army National Guard. And then I ended up later, I worked at nonprofits in child welfare, public health, and opportunity to go out to Washington, D.C. through a fellowship. And then I stayed out there. So that got me in the halls of Congress on staff as a legislative fellow. And then I stayed out. And when I was out in D.C. on Capitol Hill, I bounced back and forth between working, you know, in Congress and outside of it with the federal government and the legislative branch. And so I had served as a staffer for a congressman from Oregon, Kurt Schrader, and then also Norma Torres. And then I became the legislative director for the National Indian Gaming Association. And that's what I was doing right before I came home to do this.
So your leadership has really, I mean, to make those changes from when you were a young man to then go to college, leadership roles, then enlist, you're a veteran, and then take that initiative to Washington to really make a huge difference that way. It sounds like you've been cultivating this leadership trajectory for a long time. So tell me, what has running a campaign taught you about the kind of leader you want to be?
Yeah, you know, it's just taught me about the importance of being real, being who you are. I've found a lot of success with across all backgrounds because of just sharing my story, telling people who I am, mm-hmm. where I come from, why I'm driven, and then you sort of let the chips fall where they may. And it's worked out really well.
So tell us a little bit about your race, about the congressional district you're looking to serve, your constituents, and who you're running up against.
Absolutely. Thank you for that question. So I'm running in the first congressional district. It's the western side of the state of Idaho. It had been held by a Democrat during the last two blue wave elections. And it was lost in 2010 with the Tea Party wave. And it hasn't really been contested seriously since then. And what inspired me to run now is that in 2018, Medicaid expansion passed by over 60% of the vote. And 16 out of 19 counties in the first congressional district voted for it. And that issue is really personal to me because my dad passed away prematurely in 2014. After being laid off of his factory job, he lost his health insurance, got sick, didn't get treatment in time, and passed away abruptly. And so that was
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. It was painful. I turned that into purpose, went and worked on the implementation of the Affordable Care Act on outreach and education. But seeing that made me believe that here in my home state, even though it's a more conservative state, people by nearly two-thirds were willing to vote for something that focused around providing low-income fellow citizens access to health care. And that made me believe that with the right candidate and cause, there's a path to victory. And so that's what brought me back home to get in it. And the person I'm running against led the charge against Medicaid expansion in the state legislature. So,
are you kidding me? Right? Wow. Yeah. Yeah, you are the story of resilience. I mean, I've always been moved by your story, and particularly yesterday when our partners over at Latino Victory hosted you as well. Just an incredible story and inspiring narrative of what we can all look to and the kind of people we want to represent us in Congress. Your story is everyone's story, but the way you've been able to turn things around and make choices to not only improve your life, but serve others are exactly the qualities that I define leadership by and that I want in members of Congress. So how can everyone who's listening support you and look for you and make sure that you come to Washington this time as an elected official?
Thank you so much, Alma. So people can go to my website, rudysoto.us, learn more about me there. They can find me on social media across platforms at Rudy for Congress. Check out my campaign introduction video. We've gotten over 100,000 views, but we need to get that up closer to 250,000 or 500,000. Every little bit that people pitch in help me as I'm on the road in an RV has all my logo imagery. It doubles as a billboard and mobile campaign headquarters. So if people pitch in 25 bucks, it puts tank in my gas to help me as I'm on that.
We literally cannot let Rudy run out right? of gas. You're in an actual RV. So tell us a little bit about that. I think people want to know about what it's actually like to campaign, particularly in rural Idaho. It is not glamorous, is it?
No, it's not. Yesterday, I was sharing social media images of me being at a laundromat, you know, because those things have to get done. But it's really incredible. People will just stop up and knock on the door and want to chat. And so it's been really amazing. You know, we've done events where I'll go stand up with my banner and my team that's traveling with me to, you know, get people's attention. So it's fun. It's exciting. People honk when they see us, and I'm really enjoying it.
Tell us more about the stories you've heard from constituents in the district you're looking to serve. What are they facing? What challenges, especially now during the pandemic, do they need to overcome?
Yeah, you know, some of the challenges that I'm hearing are, you know, childcare, people of affording childcare, or, you know, figuring out how to go to work, but then have their kids be, you know, at home, and the stresses and strains that puts on people, you know, financially or mentally. You also have people dealing with challenges of you know, remote learning, but then there's no reliable internet access. There's no shortage of challenges of prescription drug prices. The kitchen table issues you hear about are really what people care most about, and that's part of what's making my candidacy resonate.
You said the kitchen table. I missed you.
Yeah, the kitchen table issues are really what are resonating with people, and it's what's helping me earn the support of people that don't typically identify with, you know, the party that I'm the nominee of.
So these stories are the same ones that we're hearing pretty much everywhere, the way everyone's being impacted by not just the pandemic, but the systemic erosion of public services and support, and that sort of safety net is perhaps not loud enough a conversation during this cycle. What do you think is keeping people like you, who have turned their lives around, who grew up? I mean, you talk about your background, and I can only imagine the challenges that folks are facing on their reservation. What do you think is keeping people of color and minority communities from running for office?
You know, I think that there's so many inspiring people that have been paving the way, and the more of us that just jump in and do it, it's, you know, even if we don't get across the finish line, we're basically passing the baton and helping make sure someone else does. And so I feel like it's all about breaking barriers and breaking down stereotypes. And, you know, you just learn by doing. Fail forward.
You're absolutely right. I think that's the difference between folks who say, and I say this all the time, oh, I want to run for office someday. That's a completely different narrative than saying, I want to serve as an elected official. because one of them already connotes victory. One of them already inherently says that a winning campaign is a byproduct of my larger purpose, not I'm called to make an attempt, right? There's a difference there that I don't think people have enough nerve, conviction, resolve to think beyond the attempts, because sometimes we don't even know how to get started. To your point, we have to fail forward, and as long there's no failure until you, unless you stop, right? So tell us more about what's next on the campaign trail for you. What do the next 48 days look like?
Yeah, so it's hitting all 19 counties here in the western side of the state all the way up till election day. So it's traveling up and down from the U.S.-Canadian border all the way down to the Nevada border and then back up again. And so it's staying here and going to small towns, big towns, engaging the community online, doing Zoom meetings, face-to-face, safe and socially distant town halls, meeting with reporters. It's a little bit of everything.
So your district is different than a lot of other races where it's a concentrated area. You are literally, how many miles do you have to cover?
I lost track. Some days I wake up and I'm like, wait, where are we? Like, what town are we in? Because it's,
wow,
and it's smoky out, and you can sometimes barely breathe because
the wildfires, that's right.
Yeah.
Cause you're practically West Coast. Like, that's gotta be impacting, not just your activities day to day, but I can only imagine air quality in the community that you're looking to do outreach in, right?
Right. And we've even had to shift the schedule around here and there because of it, because there have been fires near some of the towns we were going to. So we've had to figure out how we can circle back around to those.
So you mentioned in as part of your platform, healthcare, given your personal story, I think is absolutely critical and what folks are facing, especially now in the pandemic. Rural broadband access is also part of your platform. But I'm wondering, now that you're facing, you know, the larger effects of the wildfires, how does climate change or criminal justice or anything in that sort of in that spirit impact your platform? Are you looking to make long-term legislative change there too?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, here where I'm at, seen as it's a red state, you know, I'm presenting myself as a different kind of Democrat. And by mm-hmm. that, it mainly has to do with, you know, I grew up here in a conservative state. I have different life experiences than most people that run for office. So, you know, that's what I talk about, and that's what I focus on, and that's how I relate and connect with people. And people here that I speak with, they know that racism is real. They know that the temperatures have been getting warmer and warmer and warmer throughout our lifetimes. I mean, you can see it, you can feel it. It's just a matter of finding, for me, pragmatic, bipartisan approaches to working across party lines. And that's what I'm dedicated to. My opponent, on the other hand, is ranked 422nd out of 435 members of Congress and being among the most hyper-partisan. And so I think a lot of people really feel good about, you know, dedication to working just for the constituents of the district here and fellow citizens from around the country. And so just not being so much of like a party hack and person, but really a public servant.
Well, Rudy, you are inspiring. You are more than qualified. You are a friend. And I can only urge everyone to be so supportive of you. Give us one more time that call to action. How do we support you? Where do we learn more?
Chip at rudysoto.us to put fuel in my tank so that I can keep the show on the road. Share my information. You can go to my website and look into ways to volunteer to help with a phone bank or, you know, to help us with get out the vote outreach efforts. And find me on social media. So thank you so much,
Rudy. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. We're rooting for you, everyone. We're rooting for Rudy. We'll drop some information on how everyone can follow you and be supportive as we amplify. And thank you again. Let's try this again and see if we can get a better broadband connection. Hopefully it won't take as long as getting you in office. But let's do this
again. All right. That sounds good. Thank you so much.
Un abrazo. Thank you. All right, take care. Bye. Okay, everyone, this has been the second episode of the Campaign School. I thank you all for tuning in. Support Rudy. We'll drop information as we amplify. And also remember to donate to Latino Victory Fund. Support your candidates of color and make sure you go out and vote this November. Thanks.